New CBS Monday.
Federal agents!
Hands where we can see them!
NCIS Hawaii is back.
About to set it up!
New criminals to catch.
Armed robbery, aggravated assault, murder.
And new investigations to be solved.
These guys were good, but even masters make mistakes.
Vanessa Lachey and featuring LL Cool J.
Violin Island, you got it.
Welcome to paradise.
A new NCIS Hawaii, Monday, 10, 9 central on CBS and streaming on Paramount+.
Check out our new NBA show, Beyond the Arc, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network, where you can find me, John Gonzalez, NBA insider Bill Reiter, and Ashley Nicole Moss, 5 days a week talking all things NBA. Whether you're looking for insightful discussions, upbeat commentary, breaking news, interviews, or coverage of all the biggest stories in the NBA, our new show is the place to be 5 days a week. Download and follow Beyond the Arc on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your favorite podcasts.
Welcome into the Husker 24/7 podcast. I'm Mike Schaefer, joined by Michael Bruns, Brian Christopherson, full group back together again for the first time in a few weeks. All right, we're past it. Nebraska's already had several practices. They've had fan day. They've had all these events happen. We never got a recap of media days from the two gentlemen that were there. So in like 90 seconds or less, sum up your Indy experience, Michael Bruns.
I think that's about how long Nebraska was actually in Indianapolis. It was about 90 seconds.
They were in and out. I thought that's how long the awkward pause was.
Yeah, well, there's a lot of 90-second things going on. it was fine. They were quick. They were in and out. It was a good group. I don't think that we really learned anything that we didn't kind of already assume or know. So we didn't get the cocktail sauce at St. Elmo's. But it was all in all a good trip, I think. And you covered fan day for us, which is always it's always good to fall on that one.
I'll take that trade. I think I'll take that trade. BC, you get the remainder of the 45 seconds to talk about fan day.
Okay. Media days.
Not fan day. Excuse me, media days.
Well, I could talk about both the same about. I had no hot take from media days. I didn't have a hot take about Frost. I left there thinking it was fine. The thing people have to understand is I know there's a portion where each coach goes on stage that's on BTN Network for like 10 minutes, and some reporters who want to get their name, not all of them, but a few that want to get their name out there will ask a question, so they'll be on TV, and it's sort of a dog and pony show. There's a side session that goes on with the head coach and each players that lasts about 40 to 45 minutes. And that was, you know, fine. It was just nuts and bolts stuff from Frost about this and that going into camp. And so I really thought the whole thing was just standard procedure. And Brunson and I drove there, spent a couple hours with the boys, drove back, and it was pretty uneventful. Except the thing I do love about Bruns and you, Schaefer, is when we go on road trips, all of us appreciate a good gas station stop and like the journey to like pick our little treats for the next couple hours. And I love that about you guys. And it's what helps us stay together as a team, I think.
I almost sent Bruns a text the other day because I saw someone who had an equally as forlorn look at about 11:30 at a QT and outside of Kansas City as he had when we were driving back from Columbus, Ohio after that fateful 62-3. Brunt's walking out of that gas station. We fill up. He's got his Cheez-Its and his Coke Zero, and he's staring off into the Ohio space.
Just
and
dark.
It just looks like he wanted to be anywhere but there that night. Same guy, same look from a different guy. I almost went up and introduced myself and just told him it'd be okay. I don't know what he was going
on
through,
the back.
But it'll be okay.
We've definitely been on some tough Husker road trips like that, where you're like halfway back at a gas station, and it's sort of like the Seinfeld. I'll put some money in the jar for the reference, but where Jerry's telling George, like, "What are we doing? What are we doing?" Like, you kind of get that in your mind sometimes. So hopefully they'll turn the corner a little bit this year, and they'll be a couple less of those road trips, or where you're at like the airport gate with like 45 Husker fans at 6:30 a.m. on Sunday after a tough road loss, and like nobody can even communicate, you know, it's just like a ridiculous scene of sadness. Like the Huskers need to get past that for their fans, if nothing else, and us a little bit, I would say.
That always happens at 2 a.m. There's been three distinct times that I can remember having that feeling. It was the Ohio State game, the Tommy Armstrong miracle, the last year's Illinois game when we drove halfway back and we're sitting there eating Casey's pizza while we're filling up in nowhere, Illinois. I don't even know where we were. Like we're a game into this and this is where we are. And then 2017, when Brian and I were driving back from Happy Valley to Pittsburgh, and it was just like piss and rain everywhere and freezing, and sitting there at a very sad gas station in the middle of nowhere, Pennsylvania. Those are my three distinct memories on the beat of like, what are we doing here? Like
2017 Penn State always takes the cake to me as a game where even when you were getting ready to like fly out there, you're like, why? You know? And then like the third play of the game, Saquon Barkley gets the ball, second or third play, and it's like a 60-yard run. And you expected it. I mean, that ended up being a 56-44 game though, because Tanner Lee threw for about 250 yards in the fourth quarter when no one cared, including a last second touchdown to Jack Stoll.
That last Jack Stoll touchdown did make that scroll a little bit better. Good, yeah. Scroller.
That was the most friendly crawl of a score where the score was much closer than Nebraska lost that game by like 50 points in all honesty, and it ended up being a 12-point game. But anyway, enough about 20.
Let's talk about this year's football.
All right. Well, 6 minutes into the podcast after the Nebraska fall camp has started, we are done talking about 2017. Now, let's dive into what we've learned a little bit since fall camp has began. There's been a couple media availabilities. Nebraska's only been out in spiders so far. I think the next time we see them on Thursday, they'll be into pads, and you get a little bit different work at that time. Brian, has any of the conversation early on caught your attention? It could be position battles. It could be just the assimilation of the quarterbacks and the offense. It could be an individual assistant coach or two. Anything catch your attention these first couple media availabilities?
Yeah, I mean, I think every time Mark Whipple steps in front, there's this focus on ball security, which, I mean, obviously everybody's, you know, it's camp. Coaches are going to talk about protecting the football. But I think there's a clear understanding, and he said exactly what I always think about this Nebraska-Northwestern game. Just don't give them two or three turnovers, you know, Northwestern a plus three in the turnover column, and you can be fine in that game. And I liked his quote about how first games are so often, you know, you can give them away as often as you can actually go win them, you know, that basically is what he was saying. And he was talking about like with their red zone offense, his QBs having to know when to live for another play, when to accept that you can take 3 points here. It doesn't have to all happen right now. And I really, as he was talking, I think that's the key to that trip to Ireland and getting off to a good start is your quarterback and those guys who have to make big decisions, understanding I don't have to do it all. This play early in the third quarter might be an important play on third down, but I have to know it's not the necessarily deciding play where I don't want to give this game away and throw a pick that gets returned 60 yards for a touchdown. And maybe it's because of last year's week zero game that this is in my mind so much, where Adrian fumbled at the midfield, you know, right before the half, and it just changed everything. But I feel like that's the way this thing becomes a game in 3.5 weeks, is if Nebraska goes out there, goes -3 and gives away like a pick six or something. And I like that Whipple seemed to be sort of not just saying it specifically about that, but you got the point that that's on his mind as well.
Yeah, he had some kind of quote, like something like first games are lost a lot more than they're won, and it kind of led into what you're talking about, that mentality of where you're just trying to do a little bit too much instead of just accepting sort of what's out in front of you and letting the game kind of come to you. I thought Whipple was really interesting for a variety of reasons on Monday. Something that caught my attention, he was very strong in praise of a couple tight ends, and one of them being Travis Vokolek, which, you know, we've kind of taken for granted. Like, he didn't practice at all this spring, so he wasn't really involved in much. And the thing that Whipple really appreciated is that he thinks, you know, for Vokolek being a guy that went to media days, he thinks there's a lot more value in having him out there on the field as a leader that has been able to play, kind of getting that room moving forward, than when he was sort of on the sidelines talking with guys like Rollins and Carney and Borkircher last spring. He really feels like Vokolek had a good summer, and he's attacked the first few days of camp well, and he kind of intimated that he's made some nice plays for Nebraska as well. And then the other tight end name, and another guy who didn't practice at all this spring and has put on some good weight and looks to be somebody that, you know, might have a larger role than we would have guessed, is Chancellor Brewington. And so, you know, Whipple thought that he's had a really nice start to his spring. Said he had a great summer, likes the weight that he's put on, and is somebody that seems like he's going to be involved in a tight end room that, you know, I asked Chancellor Brewington this, and he kind of didn't go with the premise, but I asked him if he felt like the room had lost quite a bit in terms of experience, if it looked different to him. And he kind of just gave an answer signifying that even though they don't have Austin Allen and, you know, it looks different than when he first arrived, he thinks there's a pretty big hunger of those guys behind Travis Vokolek to show that, you know, it's not just going to be Travis Vokolek and a random person out there, that they have some things that they can do and they have some things that they can prove. Brunch? Yeah, oh, sorry, BT.
No, you covered it well. But I also, the thing I noticed about the tight ends, Whipple's offense has been said to be good for that position as far as like stats and stuff. And you can tell that they believe that's going to happen. Like, and Chance Brewington knows full well that he was the viral video guy of last year on the goal line for his niche blocking. And that was awesome. But I'm over that. Like, he wants to be that, but I want to be everything. And he was like 210 last year. He was more of like a receiver playing tight end, as Becton's always kind of referred to him that way, as sort of hybrid, more of a receiver guy. And now I think he wants to prove, no, I'm a tight end. I'm 225. I can do all the things you want me to do. And so that's really out in front of him.
Brunt, what'd you take away from Friday when you were there?
Yeah, I was just thinking back what I took away. It's, you know, with Travis Fisher talking and Eric Chenander talking, I think you can kind of juxtapose the two sides of the ball where they're at right now. I mean, I think, you know, in the secondary, you have so much depth. You have so many guys that probably are in a spot where they could contribute. And it's going to be fascinating to watch not only how you put the pieces together to figure out who's going to start in different spots, but also how much you rotate based on the depth that you have. They've got to find a spot for Buford. I mean, I think, you know, he's only at safety now. They like guys like Deshaun Singleton. You've got Miles Farmer back there. I think they love Tommy Hill at that corner spot opposite Quentin Newsome. You've got Omar Brown. You probably have to fit in somewhere. So there's just so many names there. And that was kind of my takeaway, was even though you basically lost three starters from last year, you have just as much, if not more, depth than you did last year. And I think when, you know, you guys are talking about the tight end spot, I mean, Sean Becton said on Monday that he kind of challenged his guys and basically said, right now it's Travis Vokolek and we don't really know who the number two guy is right now. And they've got to get that figured out. And I think Mickey Joseph also kind of threw the gauntlet down a little bit to his guys to figure out who's going to help, who, you know, can kind of be that guy that they can rely on. And I think, you know, we haven't heard from Brian Applewhite yet, but I suspect that he's kind of similar to the other guys, where he's trying to figure out that room and who he can count on and not. So, you know, I think there's a lot of proven stuff on the defensive side of the ball right now, depth-wise. You can even go into linebackers and say that too. And then on offense, it's kind of like, okay, how do we kind of figure out, in these next couple weeks, who we can rely on in Dublin and against Northwestern, so you don't have turnover issues and, you know, guys know where they're supposed to be and you can play a clean game. So it's both sides of the ball are trying to figure things out. They're just kind of doing it, I think, from different places right now.
Survivor 46 is here, and so is On Fire, the only official Survivor podcast, and we have a twist this season. The winner of Survivor 45, Dee Valladares, will be joining us every week.
We're going behind the scenes of the biggest moments, the how and the why things happen, and the strategy and analysis you can only get from someone like me, a Survivor winner.
Listen to On Fire, the official Survivor podcast, wherever you get your podcasts.
This is Tony Kornheiser's show. I'm Tony. You expected someone else? So what exactly is the show about? I don't know. It's a sports show nominally. Football's over, but we're finally at a point where things matter in college basketball, and baseball season is on deck. Greatest three words in the English language, pitchers and catchers. We have some of the best voices come on and explain what matters or what makes an upset, like Ryan does, 9-8. No, that's not an upset. No, yeah, it is, Bob. And if you're lucky, I might just tell you about my search for discounted sleep pants or my worries about what my dog just ate. Listen on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
What is your sort of biggest concern that you have right now here, August 3rd? You've heard the team talk a few different times, whether it was media days, whether it was Friday, or whether it was Monday. Where's your biggest concern for Nebraska football as it looks at the 2022 season? I mean, it could be an individual position. It could be the side of the ball. It could be the psyche. Wherever you want to go with it, it's pretty open-ended, and we'll start back with Michael Brooks.
I think it's – until I see it with my own eyes, it's going to be the offensive line, I think. I mean, we kind of know a little bit more where guys are at in terms of positions and where they're playing, but, you know, that's a group to me that you really need to see it to really believe what you're being told or what you're hearing. I believe that they're being taught differently by Donovan Raiola than what they were in the first few years of Scott Frost's tenure under Greg Austin. But what does that look like? You know, are they going to be able to run the ball with the running backs? It's the age old question. So that to me will constantly be the concern until, you know, they step on the field against Northwestern, because that group to me holds such a big kind of key for where this team is going to go in 2022.
BC? I think it's the same as when the staff arrived, and it's just what sort of a natural concern you would have in how do you pare this thing all down so that it's a menu for the quarterbacks and the offense that they can handle early on in the season. Because I think they've had a lot thrown at them, and now it's about not having that Cheesecake Factory menu, you know, that's 40 pages, but actually like stuff like, okay, this is what we really feel good about. We can trust Casey to run these plays. The receivers are on the same page with this stuff. And I've always thought, you know, as much excitement as there is, and is understandable about the new coaches, this is a daunting task. Where you have almost an entire makeover of your staff and you have 33 new scholarship guys compared to last year. And as much as people are down on Northwestern and what are they going to be? I have no idea what Nebraska football is going to look like, to be honest. I think there's reason to be optimistic about some things, and I'm not down on the dumps at all on this squad. I'm just saying that Brunch was there. Trev Alberts laid it out pretty well to the media at Big Ten Media Days. And he was candid, frankly, you know, about what's in front of Frost. And it's going to take like a great leader basically to get this all in order over the next month. Like I felt like he had a quote, if people go back and read and listen to that, where he laid out how difficult this mountain is in August and how on point everybody has to be to, you know, make it work. So that's the part that just big question of how do you get it all to make sense in such a limited time.
Yeah. No doubt about it. And you don't get to just ease into it. You're facing a Power Five team and a team that'll be hungry right away with Northwestern. And so I do think in some ways the freshness of Nebraska eliminates some of the concern of what you saw happen at Illinois last year, where when it went bad, maybe Nebraska's own mentality fed into it because they've seen that movie before. They've experienced that. Like, you see that Adrian fumble, you see the struggles in the third quarter, but you kind of, you know, if you're a player, I think it's kind of easy to feed into, okay, here we go again. If you're relatively new to Nebraska, if you're Casey Thompson, you don't have that baggage. You don't have that sort of mentality. Right. So I do think that in itself is good. We'll see how that manifests itself as they play a game. I'm going to hammer this thing until, you know, kind of like Brunch was talking about the offensive line. Probably for the first like month of the season, the thing that I am most going to be interested in is how Nebraska holds up against the run. And it doesn't have to be like a individual statistic or a individual, you know, performance, but they got to be able to stop the run to get to what I think could be the strength of this defense, which is their ability to rush the passer, their ability to get the quarterback into bad situations. I like the talent in the secondary that, you know, was Brunch was talking about with all the different depth that they have there. I think they can have a better season than Nebraska did last year in terms of takeaways, because I think they're going to get a good pass rush up front on third and long or obvious passing situations. It's just, in order to get there, you got to be able to stop the run. In order to win in the Big Ten Conference, you got to be able to stop the run. And I just don't – I mean, you still don't have Devin Drew yet. I think they're hoping he's back sometime this week. I – for as much as Stephen Wynn's Alabama experience carries some gravitas in terms of where he played, it's not like he played a lot there. So he's not someone who's coming in with a ton of reps to his name. Nash Hotmacher has to get better pretty quickly. You have guys that were recruited in Roquan Buckley and Jalen Weaver and Marquise Black that are still very much question marks. And Colton Feist, I mean, like we were kind of talking about it, Brian, the other day, but that's a guy that, you know, if it's announced when they play Northwestern, I guess I wouldn't be shocked if he's the guy next to Ty Robinson pretty early on in that game. You know, I mean, I think that's kind of where Nebraska's at. And that's not to say that that's a bad thing, because Colton Feist has been a guy that we've heard about as, and you were kind of quick to point this out, you know, his teammates and that coaching staff would bring him up unprompted constantly as, you know, this guy's doing some stuff. And he had a good productive high school career. He's played in some games before. So he's going to be more involved than I definitely thought coming into fall camp. So that interior defensive line spot is going to have my attention a lot this year. What, Brian, what stood out for you when we were at media availability on Monday where we could actually watch practice? You were putting together your award-winning highlights. I was shooting photos. What stood out to you as you were watching things?
The special teams work, which they put in front of us, maybe with a purpose they did that, but they had the drills where guys were working in what I would consider like almost like a rectangle. Like, you know, they're running down basically like 15 yards and had 5 yards of width one-on-one. And it was very close quarters. Like, it was special teams work where you're in a phone booth sort of. And so you really have to work on your technique and fundamentals to beat the guy either that you're trying to get past or you're trying to block. And Sean Becton brought that up after the practice too, as a specific difference. I think he sees in some of the drills they're doing this year compared to the past, as far as we're putting these guys in tight spaces and they're really needing to execute those little details that they're talking about in the film room to have success in those tight spaces. So I thought that was interesting to actually see something play out. We're only there for like a half hour, but in 5 to 10 minutes where you're like, okay, here's actually something where you can point to and, you know, take some shots of where that might be different than it was last year. Cause people always ask, well, what's going to be different? How's it going to be different? Well, they are doing some new things, I think, under Bill Bush. And I think they were putting some of that on display for us. So that part. And then I would say Donovan Raiola, this should be expected. He's an O-line coach. Of course, he doesn't just sit there mute, you know, and all this. But I do think there's this great curiosity about him because he's not the most talkative guy in interview sessions where the public sees him. So they kind of wonder, what's he like, you know, with his players and all that. And he's an intense guy. You know, when there's a Raiola switch that goes on, I think you see when the practice starts, and every drill within the drill, he was like right there with the guys walking 15 yards with them in their ear hole about this and that. And, you know, we have some of that on video and people can see it for themselves, but you know, it's just good for the people to see, like, okay, that's the O-line coach. That's how he operates. He's an O-line coach, you know, like it was what you would expect, but it was still, I think, comforting to the fan base.
Yeah. Raiola, you know, before they were in their stretching line or whatever, it seemed like he was trying to find every offensive lineman and make sure he gave him a high five. He definitely came across as a big energy guy, trying to get things sort of rolling there on Monday. I think one of my takeaways, and this is something that I guess isn't really revealing because it's not like we haven't seen the beginning of practices before or this assistant coach before, but sometimes, you know, we talk about Travis Fisher, we talk about, like, he tends to, in recruiting, seem to be a little bit detached from things, or, you know, he's not as showy or as involved. I think people would have a different sort of view of Travis Fisher if they went and watched him coach his defensive backs. That guy is all over all of his players all the time. I mean, if he's, you know, even just like a little footwork thing, he's quick to point it out. I mean, he's just very, very involved, and that's really important, especially this year, because he's got less experienced players. He's got guys that have to make pretty, you know, substantial moves and have to earn spots, and he wants to play. I mean, what was it, Brunts? I think you listened to the audio. He wants to play 8 or 9 guys this year in his secondary. And so watching him kind of work with those guys as they went through, you know, whether it was stuff that was special team stuff or individual defensive back drill stuff and crowding out a guy in the red zone, just stuff like that. I mean, he was getting pretty involved, pulled guys off to the side a lot. Like, it was a really active coaching session, or so it felt for him on Monday. And that room, it really interests me because I think there's a lot of talent there. I do wish that I hadn't seen Omar Brown kind of walking around not practicing. I don't know. I don't love that he missed most of spring. I don't love that he was hurt at the end of his FCS campaign with Northern Iowa. I don't know what that portends for him. You know, like, at some point he's got to be healthy enough that he can go through practice for you. If he's really going to be one of those 8 or 9 guys that's playing this year. Also, another guy that caught my attention, Isaac Gifford. He's going to play, I think, quite a bit this season. He was getting some praise from Travis Fisher, and that nickelback spot's going to be pretty interesting with him and Chris Kolarovic and how they rotate those guys and what that looks like at different times. I kind of feel like the base nickel, Nebraska's going to play a lot of base nickel this year.
I just going off of Brian's award-winning video, there was a noticeable uptick in the intensity with the hitting that the defensive backs were doing. Like, they were popping pads, and, you know, you're only 20 minutes or so into practice, and there was, you know, I think a very obvious work by Travis Fisher and the defensive staff to kind of up the intensity level there. Marcus Buford talked a little bit about it this week, that no matter how much of a entrenched starter you are, whether you're Cam Taylor, Britt, or whoever, he does a really good job of keeping guys uncomfortable. And I think that's kind of the point that you were getting at, Mike, is that he keeps the competition going. You can't take days off. You can't take plays off. And there was a noticeable sense of urgency in that group from what I was able to see.
Awesome. Let's round things out with a little bit of recruiting talk here. Nebraska lost Ashley Williams, who decommitted over the weekend, a four-star outside linebacker from Louisiana. Kind of an odd situation. I have definitely heard some things, but there's only so much that you can verify. And I can put it like this. This is what I feel comfortable sort of saying as that goes through. Nebraska's in a spot where they're getting a lot of recruiting from guys that don't recruit their position room, but are recruiting for the team. And that, and especially in potential transition years, can lead to where, you know, someone really wants a player, but maybe the position coach or that side of the ball isn't as interested, or they have a different standing on their board. And so you kind of get into these situations where as spots get limited, decisions sort of have to be made. I think that if you look at this, it's pretty obvious that Nebraska sees Cameron Linhart higher on their board than Ashley Williams. And if they only have two spots for outside linebackers and Cameron Linhart is still out there, they want to kind of close that out. I think they're going to end up with that commitment. I don't know when that's going to happen, but I also feel like there's a way they could have made it work with both. So I found myself a little like somewhat surprised that a position like outside linebacker, where Nebraska has struggled to get consistent production for several years now, outside linebacker, edge rusher, whatever we want to call it. I don't even know what to do with that anymore. But where they've struggled to get production for several years, that you wouldn't have been able to make room for another guy there. I mean, it feels like that the numbers thing will take care of itself. Like that's always a hard part with this when people ask, like, okay, how many are they going to take in the 2023 class? Well, we don't know who's going to transfer on October 1st because he's unhappy with something. We don't know who's going to have an injury. We don't know who's going to be like a freshman that just decides he doesn't want to be here anymore. I mean, the numbers sort of take care of themselves. I mean, remember the conversation about how Nebraska was going to get to 85? They got to 85, and there wasn't like any massive surprises along the way other than maybe Casey Rogers. So I feel like that's kind of true with the recruiting aspect of it too. And so I found myself a little surprised with the way the Ashley Williams thing kind of played out. BC, I know you talked to him a couple times and you know that he was fairly tight with Mickey Joseph and with the staff. I mean, when it went from his kind of commitment to his decommitment, were you surprised at how quickly that played out?
Yeah, because I thought he was a pretty good recruiting win for Nebraska. Nebraska was one of the first to the table for him, like as far as Power Five offers. And then he got a boatload of them, you know, throughout the spring and stuff. And I think it added up beyond 25 or 30 when it was all said and done. Minnesota and Nebraska had been both out there at the beginning. Remember, he took the visit official to Minnesota too. So I saw it as kind of a nice win, you know, again, with a league opponent involved and, another nice win in Louisiana. And I like, you guys see this on like Friday Night Lights events. You'll see like this, it's kind of funny. Like the Georgia crew will all stick together. There'll be like six or seven guys. And then there's Louisiana crew. And the Louisiana crew is growing. And I'm not saying just to take a guy because he's from Louisiana, but they've got something popping there with Mickey and Brian Applewhite, and some of those guys have connections there, and he would have been another to that list. So I was surprised how quickly it went, because what he committed 3 or 4 weeks ago, really,
like July 11th. I think.
Yeah, well, it wasn't that long ago, and I felt like yesterday I just did that interview. So that's always kind of startling when he's not there anymore. But I think you laid out what the situation is pretty well. And I can see the challenge of that too. I'll say that. Like I get it where you're on a staff and certain guys are recruiting specific states or regions and they might love this guy and a position coach or whatever, the coordinator, they might think, well, I don't know if he fits exactly what we want. And you're going to have differing opinions sometimes on prospects. So I'm sure there's a lot of back and forth on that. And maybe that was the case here. Linhart, who I think is also coming Nebraska's way at some point, is a very good prospect himself. And, you know, I do think that's a position group you can't have enough of, but I like how they're stacking it. If Jamari and Blaze take off sort of this year too, then maybe you feel pretty good about the future there.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. Any closing thoughts here as we move forward? Nebraska will have another media availability on Thursday. And then we'll get into does Frost talk again on Friday? Do we get back to back?
You get Thursday and Friday.
Wow, look at that. Back-to-back media availability to finish out the week. Scott Frost will talk again on Friday. Yeah, any closing thoughts as we're ending this thing here?
No, but it's the season's getting close. I don't know if people really have a sense of that. I mean, we're under 20 days until Nebraska leaves for Dublin. So fall camp is quickly dwindling away.
All right. Well, you're also heading to Dublin. We should let the people know that. Michael Bruns will be over there in Ireland to cover this game. Husker 24/7 going international.
We are.
Are you going to want Bruns when you do that? Are you going to want Schaefer and I to get – what's the time difference again?
6 hours.
So it's – they're ahead six.
Yeah. I figured we could probably do a podcast, you know, about 1 a.m.
That's there. What I was wondering if – yeah.
Yeah.
Or if it was like 4 a.m. our time, if you were gonna have, you're gonna tell us like get up at 4 a.m. We got to talk for 15 minutes.
You're setting the schedule. We're just marching to the tune. So
I'll stay up late. I'm sure I'll have stuff to do at that hour. So
as long as I've known you, I've never known you to go to bed early. So
yeah, midnight's fine. We'll make it work.
A 1 a.m. text from you is never out of the question, regardless of what country you're in.
So. Nope. I'm going to be up at 1 a.m. in Dublin, probably watching an old Nebraska-Iowa game. Texting you guys about it.
So what time is that Hawaii plays?
Basically, I'm going to need the cab driver in Dublin to try and find it on the radio on the way to the airport to make sure I get that Vandy Hawaii game in. It's 5:30 a.m. there is when they're going to kick.
Yeah.
Amazing. Better Call Saul star Brian Christopherson. Any closing thoughts?
That would be a real reach after I watched it. You have to like super pause that bad boy and do some investigative work to figure out.
I knew it instantly.
Well, I think that's because you had clues in the. I think we knew that they had taken a story that I wrote from some of the guys.
But. It's just that when you're watching it and the guy's holding up a newspaper and it's a sports section of a place where you used to work, you have kind of a long last name. So it's sort of, you know, you could just visualize it right there.
It was a fun episode. And Taylor Martinez, Brandon Kinney gets some mention. Reggie Ball from the 95 team got thrown in there, which is kind of random. He must have been the leading receiver that year or something. They just like, who's the leading receiver? Throw his name out there. But Brandon Kinney did have a big game against Oklahoma State, if you remember, in that what they're referencing. He caught a touchdown at the end that sort of sealed a wild win, which you could argue was the best win of the Pelini, one of the best wins, not the best, but one of the best wins of the Pelini era, beating a ranked Oklahoma State team on the road.
All right. Well, we started with gas station faraway looks, and we finished with Brandon Kinney's big game against Oklahoma State in 2010. No podcast is going to replicate that for you. That's why we're Husker 24/7. That's why you listen to us, because frankly, we don't know where it's going either. So why would you? That's the tagline. Be sure to check out Husker 24/7. Plenty of coverage. You still got stuff coming up from our media availability for Monday. There'll be plenty of stories on that. Recruiting stuff rolling along. High school football is about to get underway, so we'll have coverage there, both locally and afar with Nebraska's commits. So be sure to check out Husker247.com. We'll catch you next week with another podcast.
Paramount Plus and the National Park Foundation present A Mountain of Zen. Are you still listening? Good. Take a deep breath. You needed a break. This Earth Week, you can live stream 7 national parks for 7 days on Paramount Plus. So, yes, you can literally stream a stream. Paramount Plus,
official streaming partner of the National Park Foundation.